Good morning, church. So good to see you and to be with you all. And some of you I haven't gotten to see in longer than others. And I'm especially glad to see our brother Ryan Rucker back there on the back row. Don't go up to him. Leave him alone. Let him heal. But he's here, and we're super thankful for it. It's been a long, long road. He doesn't need to be jostled. He's sitting on the back row for a reason. So none of you knuckleheads will run by and hit him with your elbow or anything like that. But we are so thankful that he is at a point he can be here. It has been a difficult weekend. Had the funeral of Bob yesterday, and Steve and I ended up doing that, funerals are always hard. Sometimes they're harder than others. And I don't post stuff like that on Facebook, though. I mean, if you follow me on Facebook, you see the stuff that I post on social media. And you'll probably see something like this. See a picture of me with my wife at some fun event, or with my kids at their college, or I'm running into old friends, or those. So that tends to be the stuff that I put, a great meal that we share. Truthfully, you're more likely to see sermon teasers if you follow me on social media, or something stupid that I wrote, or something I thought was funny. That's most often what I post. But if I'm posting pictures of my life, this is what it tends to look like. And based on these pictures, if you just saw the pictures, you'd think that my life looks pretty great. And my life is pretty great. But it's not that great, right? It's certainly not perfect. You don't get the whole picture from this. You may have noticed that I have not posted anything about my broken picket fence in my front yard because the stupid wood is rotting through and I've got to replace that section of the fence or the whole fence because it looks like it's about to fall over. I have not posted any pictures of the pile of Kleenex when my allergies went nuts a couple weeks ago. I have not posted any close-ups examining my receding hairline. That's not the stuff that I put out there. I put out the good stuff. I don't put out that other stuff. You just tend to get the surface stuff, the good stuff, right? The stuff that we're happy to share. And even when things are bad, by the way, when our relationships are rough, or when our jobs are a struggle, or when the bills are piling up, we just don't acknowledge that stuff. It's a lot simpler, it's a lot easier to just gloss over that stuff and just show you the stuff I like. But there comes a time when that approach, our go-to strategy, when that approach just won't do. There comes a time when, in the words of the great American theologian Louis Grizzard, sometimes we just have to tell it all, brother, tell it all. I'm so glad not many of you know what that is. But the book of Joel is just one such occasion. And the occasion is this: bad stuff is about to happen, it's already started happening, and it's about to get worse. And in fact, the running theme through the book of Joel is the day of the Lord is coming, so wake up and face facts. The day of the Lord is coming, so wake up and face facts. But we're kind of getting a little ahead of ourselves because that's not where Joel starts. Where Joel starts is really interesting. Where he starts, after he kind of an introduction, like who he is, it literally just says Joel's got a super abrupt introduction. The word of the Lord, the message of the Lord came to him. We don't know if it's a vision. We don't know if it's a dream. We don't know anything. We don't know if he's just writing this down or if it's a sermon. Joel is odd among a group of odd books. But this is where he starts. This is where the first thing he says: hear this, you elders. Listen, all who live in the land. Has anything like this happened in your days or in the days of your ancestors? Tell it to your children. and let your children tell it to their children, and their children to the next generation. That's where he starts, which seems like an odd place, right? Because we don't even know what Joel's message is going to be. Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? But you can already sense it's going to be something big, something monumental, something that's not just life-changing, but nation-changing, even world-changing. I mean, language like this is used in the Old Testament. For instance, in Deuteronomy chapter 5, the Shema, where they say, you know, after they received the word from the Lord, and they were like, write this message down and tell it to your children, and tell it to them when you go to bed, and tell it to them when you rise up. You need to pass this on to your children. There's also times when telling things to your kids and passing things on to your kids, it's not such good news. Sometimes it's when bad things are happening. Now, we know bad things happen. We're not oblivious, right? Bad things happen in this world. There's earthquakes and floods and droughts and economic recessions and military conflicts, all bad stuff. And all this stuff is happening all the time. You could pick up a newspaper in Tennessee or California or, you know, New Hampshire or Canada or South America or Africa or Asia, and there's always bad stuff happening. You know, crime is out of control in some parts, and there's not enough food in some parts, and there's another military conflict in some parts. There's bad stuff happening all the time. This is not that. This is different. Not just in scale, because he's saying it's going to be bigger, but the difference is in effect. What it does is something that everybody needs to know about. He's saying something big and bad is going to happen, but it's a big, bad, changing thing. In other words, this is not just business as usual. Sometimes you read those headlines in the paper and you're like, oh, there was, there was a 7-car pileup in Knoxville. Well, that's awful. Doesn't really affect me. Right? Or I heard that there were floods in California, mudslides in California when they had a bunch of rain, and oh, that's bad, but doesn't really affect me. Sometimes we can hear bad news and think that doesn't have anything to do with me or with us. This is not that. This is something he's saying. You cannot shrug this off. You cannot ignore it. You cannot sweep it under the rug. You cannot gloss over it. You can't treat it like we just treat our social media feeds and just show everyone the good stuff. There comes a time where we have to get real and face facts and pass that along. Acknowledge what is happening, what God is doing in the world, and newsflash, sometimes what God's doing in the world is not all sunshines and rainbows and unicorns. Sometimes, according to what Joel says, it's just the opposite. And so this is we're going to read a couple of verses back to back. Verse 4, and then we'll skip down to verse 6, and you'll see why in a sec. What the locust swarm has left, the great locusts have eaten. What the great locusts have left, the young locusts have eaten. What the young locusts have left, other locusts have eaten. It's all about the locusts. Then let's get down to verse 6, and he says this. A nation has invaded my land, a mighty army without number. It has the teeth of a lion, the fangs of a lioness. So when you get these verses almost back to back, but it can be a little difficult to make out. So let me just kind of break down what's going on for you here. I don't know. Is it an environmental disaster? Is it a military conflict? Is it both? Or is it neither? And, you know, sometimes people say to me, you know, people just need to read the Bible and just need to take the Bible at its word, and what the Bible says what it means, and the Bible means what it says, and we just don't need to be involved in all this man's interpretation. And man, that would sure be nice. And that's all well and good when you're reading a story about something that happened, but then you get to some books like Joel, and Joel is saying what he's meaning, and he is meaning what he's saying. The trouble is, I don't know what he means when he says that. By definition, it requires us to do some interpretation, or or not do it, depending on how you look at it. Because sometimes Joel uses this language that it's not so much that he's a prophet. So you think about prophets predicting the future, but things don't always happen like this is not a movie of something that happens in the future. That's not the way prophecy works. Rather, most of the time the prophets are talking about big things, bad things are going to happen, and they're played out in this way. And so Joel talks about a group of swarms of locusts, piling, and maybe he's, because it sounds like that's an awful thing. And by the way, we do have historical record. In 1915, there were this locust swarm that came into the Holy Lands, and people were talking about you couldn't even go outside, and the swarms were like rivers running down the streets, and they were out in the fields, and people were standing in their orchards and in their vineyards, and they're waving sheets and fans trying to save the crops. It was economic and agricultural devastation. This was not that long ago, right? We have record of that. So something like that could be happening. Or Joel could be talking about, you know, he could be using alliterative language, talking about economic disaster after economic disaster. Or maybe it's all talking about invading armies from Assyria. Some people have taken this and said, oh, this is first locust is, you know, King so-and-so from here, or King so-and-so from there. And maybe it's that. So I don't know. But here is what I do know for sure out of this. Joel says that bad things are going to happen, have already started happening, and you haven't noticed. Bad things have already started happening, and you aren't paying attention. So whether it's a literal locust plague or it's a taking over of the country by another country, things are about to get B-A-D bad. Things are going to be seriously bad. And in the second half of this first chapter, Joel goes on to describe just how bad. We're not going to read all of it, but in parts of it, he talks about how bad it's going to be for the farm workers, how the farm workers are going to be ashamed. You know why you're ashamed? Because you can't feed your family. That's how bad it is. When a farm worker can't feed their family, that's bad. He talks about a virgin or a young girl, but really he's talking about like a young bride, someone who's about to get married, a fiance, we might say. And instead of wearing her pretty wedding dress in celebration, she is wearing this coarse cloth and sitting in ashes and mourning because her groom is dead. Things are so bad that he tells the priest, you need to pay attention because there's not going to be any burnt offerings coming in. There's not going to be grain offerings. There's not going to be any wine offerings. There's not going to be, you know, offerings of the first fruits. Why would people not do those things? And by the way, that's really bad news for priests who don't have land of their own to cultivate, who survive off of the generosity of people coming to temple. He's like, the priests don't think you're going to be immune from this. You're not getting any burnt offerings. So it's going to be bad for you. Things are going to be bad all the way around. And Joel is kind of drive that fact home. In fact, he says, priest, what you need to do is you need to call everybody together, the whole nation, elders, young people, everybody, call the whole nation together for a time of fasting and prayer. Now, you might remember in the New Testament, Jesus talks about fasting and prayer. And when his disciples ask about it, and Jesus says, well, you don't need to fast right now because I'm here. But when you do fast, don't like put charcoal under your eyes and make yourself look gaunt and skinny, like, oh, look how great I am at fasting. He's like, no, clean up, look nice. You don't make yourself look worse than you really are. And when you pray, similarly, he's like, you're not doing this for show. You go into your closet and you pray in private. So Jesus gave these instructions. Again, this is not that. This is not private fasting and prayer. We might call this a convocation. Because he says, I want you to call everybody together, the whole nation, which would be difficult to do, to get everybody in one spot. But he says, I want you all to come before the Lord, and I want everybody to throw themselves before the throne of God in fasting, in prayer, in repentance, and in contrition. sometimes the prophets, when we've been, as we've been going through, you probably noticed a little bit of a pattern, because sometimes the prophets call for the people to turn to God instead of turning to these other gods. Sometimes it says, trust in the might and the protection of God instead of trusting in these other nations. Sometimes he says, you need to turn to God instead of money. Turn to God instead of power. Turn to God instead of corruption. Turn to God. There's all these reasons to turn to God, but Joel is different because he doesn't spell things out so clearly other than to just call everybody to repentance and to lament, to mourn what's about to take place. This is what he says about it. Alas for that day. For the day of the Lord is near, and it will come like destruction from the Almighty. And Joel makes heavy use. He quotes, just like all the other prophets, he quotes Ezekiel a lot. He quotes, right here he's quoting from Isaiah. He pulls from a lot of the other prophets and applies it to their current situation. So it was a very preacher-like thing to do. And here he quotes from Isaiah that the destroyer is going to destroy. What's about to take place is not an ordinary disaster. It's a day of the Lord. And there's going to be a couple of different days of the Lord in the book of Joel. This is, we might say, just for clarification's sake, Joel is referring to here is a day of the Lord. What he's going to be talking about later in the book is the day of the Lord. And there's a little bit of a difference. But let's talk about this one first, because this one is about destruction. It's about judgment. It's about coming, the sweeping change. He says all of the land is in mourning. If you are a person who really identifies with nature, there are certain keys. You know, sometimes people say, oh, man, we're going to have a cold winter because I saw a bunch of woolly worms at my grandma's house, right? Or we're going to have a really big harvest because, you know, the moon was green or something. I don't know. I don't really read the Farmer's Almanac, but whatever. You know, people are really tuned into nature. You figure these things out. And Joel says, my people are so unattuned from nature that you're not noticing all this stuff piling up, how it's about to get really bad, that the whole land is in mourning and it's going to be awful. The land is crying out, and it's time for my people, who are supposed to be paying attention to me like nature, my people need to wake up and smell the coffee. Does anyone remember the old Saturday Night Live? It's an old Saturday Night Live skit, which I'm not advertising you to watch. But it was about a character called Debbie Downer. Do you remember those? Okay. Not going to play the skit up here. But long story short, she's a character that no matter how good things are going, no matter how joyous the occasion, she can bring, she can just suck the mood right out of it. She can ruin anything. All right, and the kind of the running gag was, you know, we're with the kids at Disney World. Isn't this a great thing? And she goes, yeah, too bad about cancer. I mean, everybody's like, oh, my word. You know, we're just trying to enjoy a birthday or something. And she just brings bad news upon bad news and ruins everything. And I think sometimes we as Christians are so concerned about being that person, about ruining and bringing, you know, sadness and anger or frustration. We're so concerned about being that person, the Debbie Downers, that we gloss over the fact that God, God is actually calling for us to acknowledge that everything God is doing in the world is for the good of the world, but it's not always what we would think of as good. That we need to be attuned to our world in a way, the sort of way in which we see and cry out the way nature sees and cries out. Whether it's, you know, economic disaster or agricultural disaster or racial tensions or economic failures or injustice, we need to be tuned in and cry out the way nature does. So in line with the will of God, that we acknowledge what God is doing in the world, even when we don't like it. We can't go around pretending like everything is okay when everything is not okay. That we can't just tell the highlights of our world. That we can't just have the social media version of our world. That we can't tell just those pieces, but the whole story. That sometimes God is giving me blessing upon blessing, but sometimes God is giving me correction upon correction. That sometimes God I am overflowing with joy and goodness, and sometimes I'm overflowing with sorrow and mourning. The thing that God called, and through Joel, called his people, Judah, to acknowledge was that he is in the middle of their hardest days. And we don't like to think that. I like to think when things are good, God is close. When things are bad, God is far. But that is not always the truth. In fact, that is never the truth. And sometimes, in fact, God is closer to us on our darkest days than our greatest days. That sometimes he's calling to us to be closer in our struggles. This morning, I don't know where you are or what you are going through, but if you are going through a difficult time, what you need to know and take from today is that despite how it looks, God is not far from you. Despite how you feel, God is not far from you. Despite the way the world looks, your family looks, your bank account looks, despite how any of that looks or feels or sounds or appears, despite all of that, God is not far from you. And if we can walk with you through the struggle, if we can help you in this time of need, we want you to come now as we stand and as we sing.